part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part.
How are you doing, my friend?
I am doing all right. I got next to like no sleep last night, so my body's running on a few fumes. But no, it's going pretty well. How about you?
It's okay. I had a weird night last night as well. I went to the Cruel World Festival here in Pasadena, in California, and it's like what I call it, Geezer Fest. I jokingly call it Geezer Fest because it's a bunch of like 80s performers. But
okay,
yeah, like Susie Sue was doing her first performance in like 15 years, and it's the it's the only one in the U.S. And Iggy Pop was like right before her, which was amazing.
Oh, wow.
And they shut it down like right in the middle of Iggy Pop set. So. And they had to evacuate because they were like, there's lightning storms coming. And we're like, what? This is California. This is Southern California. That doesn't happen. So I think that there was a report of a storm moving in and someone pulled, you know, the cord, you know, just, you know, knee jerk reaction, I guess, for safety, you know, whatever. But sure. Luckily, the show is on again tonight. So I will be awesome. There. Yeah, yeah. They're doing it. But yeah, it was a weird night. It's like, everyone evacuate. And it's like, what? You know, so.
All right.
Yeah. So, but I hope that you are doing okay, despite the lack of sleep.
No, like I said, it's a pretty lazy Sunday around here. So,
Oh, okay.
Probably just going to put on a baseball game. Yeah, probably fall asleep watching the baseball game. You know how it goes.
Nice. Well, so it sounds like the mysterious Wells Thompson will not be joining us again.
No, his
he exists, yeah, right? Like he's not like
I can
like
neither
Norm's
confirm
wife
nor deny.
from Cheers, right? He exists. It's so funny because his name is the one on all the projects on Kickstarter.
Yes, all under his name, but
someday
no, Wells has that erratic restaurant schedule. So
gotcha. Yeah, no, I've been there. But someday, Wells, someday we will chat. I will get you. But let's start with you. You are Dalton K. Shannon. This
is
the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. You, sir, this is like your fourth time on our show.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, because we had you on for Frankenstein the Unconquered. I got it right this time. Last time, I could not get the title correct to save my life of Frankenstein the Unconquered. There's just a lot of Frankenstein books out there, Dalton.
Which is good, you know?
I guess, yeah.
More fun.
Yeah, and we had you on for Mechaton as well. Mm-hmm. And you came on to trash the Conan the Barbarian movie with us.
Very Conan Christmas.
Very Conan Christmas, which I appreciated, even though you weren't as crazy about it as Evis or myself. But, you know, that's what opinions are for.
It was a time.
Yeah, different strokes for different folks. That's fine. And your current project is called Depths, which is currently on Kickstarter, correct?
That is right. It's running all throughout this month. So, it ends on May 31st.
Absolutely. And we're going to have it up this week. I'm going to try and have it up by Thursday of this week so more people can be notified of it. There is another interview that is going up earlier this week. So that will go up earlier and then yours will go up Thursday because it is the rare occasion where we have two interviews in 1 week on Part-Time Fanboy. Yes, schedules have gone crazy. So, Dalton, it's good to hear from you. I'm glad that you're doing okay despite your lack of sleep.
Yes.
Why don't you give us the pitch on Depths? Let's just get started. Let's sell this puppy.
Sure. Yeah. So Depths is our latest Kickstarter project about a scientist named Emil Parker who creates a perpetual diving suit. So pretty much changes the entire landscape of underwater exploration overnight. Mm. However, on the test launch for the suit, something goes wrong and Emil gets trapped underwater for 3 years.
Oh, geez.
So Depths is about his his struggle to survive in an environment that is constantly trying to kill him, but also overcome like his anxiety, his grief, his depression. During all of this, his best friend on the surface is also still searching for him, despite everyone telling him that Emil is dead. So they're both kind of struggling with their own depressive tendencies and trying to find each other again.
Yeah, I mean, when I checked out the Kickstarter initially, it looked like it was, at first it seemed like the description was like a slice of life or dealing with depression or anxiety and mm-hmm. stuff. And then I kept reading and I'm like, oh no, this is something different. But it sounds like you're tackling some really heady kind of emotional issues in this. Do you want to sort of like address that a bit?
Yeah, Depths is by far our most grounded, character-driven literary work. Mechaton and Frankenstein are a ton of fun, but they're super over the top and action heavy. And with Depths, we really wanted to explore characters' headspaces. And having the opportunity to do that in an underwater setting where you get all these great visuals and cool vistas and all sorts of stuff, the metaphor just kind of writes itself. Mm. And so, yeah, we just wanted to kind of talk about stuff that was really personal to us. For me especially, it's a book that's basically a journal. You know, art as therapy is probably the best way to describe it for me. Mm. So, like... So yeah, Depths is super important to us, and it's a lot heavier than what we're used to writing, but it's all the better for it.
Gotcha. And it's a period piece, right? Like it is right. A diving suit set, like, I mean, it looks like set, what, like turn of the 20th century, around that time period? Because it's a big old timey diving suit, right?
Like, right, yeah. No, it's, what the popular culture knows as a diving suit, that's pretty much what it is. But it's set, I believe the exact year is like 1936 or so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's gotcha. It's in the 30s.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was just, I wanted people to know that it's kind of like a sort of period piece, because they could think, you know, they're diving like today and somebody comes up with like right. an Iron Man sort of thing. And it's, it's not that, it's a little bit different, but, I love it. It's a period piece. I mean, the art, who's your artist on this?
We have, Jay Sheik. We've actually worked with, Jay before. He did a variant cover for, Mechaton
okay.
for us. And then we really liked his super, moody and like charismatic and beautiful line work. It fit Depths really well, because this book needs to not only have really cool underwater visuals, but it also needs to have excellent like character acting. Mm. And Jay is able to deliver that in spades. So, you know, Jay's great.
Nice. And I mean, it's interesting how you're sort of approaching these emotional themes, and it's quite an interesting device to sort of like create the diving suit and then getting lost, sort of like, I'm going to just say like bottom of the ocean, but you know, I haven't read it. So I don't, you know, I don't know, you know, what he finds in the depths of the ocean, but like, how did this sort of like thing come about? Because it seems like, did you start from a place of wanting to explore the emotional issues, or did the diving suit idea come up first? Like, how did you sort of like craft the issues that you want to explore? You know, was it the setting or the emotional content that came first for you guys?
Well, Depths came about, I'm convinced that sometimes, creatively, I'm a bit like an idiot savant, because I was going through probably the first real experience I had ever had with depression. Mm. So it was early to mid 20s. I was like, I don't know how to feel about any of this. And so I was just really, I was just depressed. And this image of a deep sea diver walking underwater, like that's the image that just popped in my head. And I was like, okay, what's that story? That looks really cool. And then I just started writing it. And, you know, over the course of like 2 days, I had written the first issue of Depths. Mm-hmm. And then I tried to write more and it just kind of died. It wasn't going anywhere. The pacing was all over the place. I just couldn't make it work. And I don't know, maybe a month or two later, I was still keeping in contact with Wells. We had both graduated college and had been doing our own projects, but we were kind of meeting up, having drinks, kind of workshopping some of our own projects. And I mentioned Depths to Wells, and he seemed to really kind of latch onto it. He's like, oh, that's clever. It's a deep sea diver dealing with depression. And he's like, that metaphor is really good. And I was like, oh my God, there's a metaphor there. Wow. Okay. Like I had no idea. And I was even talking about my own depression a little bit. And then Wells was like, no, I can relate to this really well. And he, asked if he could kind of have a crack at it. And he was able to figure out what wasn't working with the book, and he was able to kind of resuscitate it. And that was our first real collaboration, was working on Depths together. And it's led to all the nonsense in between.
Sure. That's really interesting where the inspiration came from. I mean, the idea that you sort of, because I mean, we've all either dealt with, you know, some people more than others. Obviously, I don't want to say like depression is something, like severe depression is something that everyone goes through, because I don't want to, minimize people's experience and stuff like that. Was the depression that you experienced, did something set it off? You don't have to tell me or tell anyone what it was. You don't have to go into personal details. Or was it just like, because I mean, for some people, it's an experience, right? Like the death of a family member, even a pet. You know, I've had friends go into deep depression over, you know, not minimizing pets. I love cats and dogs. I have a dog. I love him, you know, but I'm just saying, like, sometimes it's an event. Sometimes it's just life. Sometimes people, you know, they have chemical imbalances and stuff like that. Yeah. Like what was it for you that sort of put you in that place of like, because whenever we feel like that, we feel like we're alone. Right. I mean, I have experience with it as well. And it's very much like, nobody can understand where I'm at. Nobody knows where I'm going and things like that. And so what was it for you that just like might have, you know, caused this? Because there's other people who have no idea like what you're talking about, you know, when you experience that. So,
yeah, I agree that basically everyone has experienced some form of depression in their lives, but probably not clinical depression.
Yeah.
But at least bouts of it. And mine came from, I will admit, a very privileged place, because up until I graduated college, I had always had a great family and support system and friend groups. Like, we were all really tight and we were all really supportive and we were all there for each other. And I had like this clear direction going to school, going to college, that kind of thing. And then I graduated and I was living in this tiny one bedroom apartment away from all of that support system. And I was having to do like a crummy maintenance job at the apartment complex to pay rent. And I was feeling stuck and I was feeling alone. And I had no idea what the next phase of my life was going to be. And it was really oppressive and it was suffocating. And I guess my brain just kind of translated that into a guy trapped at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
And it kind of writes itself sometimes.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm glad that you were able to use this project and, you know, whatever else you were able to use to get through your situation. You know, I don't know how, if it's still ongoing and stuff like that, but in our conversations, you've always, you know, and not saying this about people who are clinically depressed, because I mean, you can present as something and you know, nobody would know, but you seem like a very together, very bright, very intelligent young man. So I'm hoping that you're doing well on that front. That's
all I'm gonna say. The great thing about depression is that it can only go in one direction, more or less. Like it can only get better.
Yeah.
Like you just kind of like it. For me, it was like this project. It was finding some sense of direction again. I mean, for me, I honestly just had to like move back home and kind of recenter myself a little bit before I was ready to go off into the next chapter. But no, it's depression has this seductive quality to it where you think like it's the end of the road, but it's there's always like the next step that can always take you to a better place. And I think that's one of the cool things about Depths. Is that it's not really a story about like overcoming depression or grief or anxiety. It's a story about finding a way to get up and deal with it more or less. Like Emil is, I mean, he's pretty much convinced that nobody's coming for him, and he's trapped down there. So he's kind of just having to force himself every day to just get up and walk around, find some food, explore a little bit, and try and make what he can of this life that he now lives. And I don't know, that's always been some of the best advice I've gotten while going through it. Is like you find people who will love and support you, and you just keep getting up. Like it's sitting down isn't really an option for at least for me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that that's a very healthy and great way to look at it, because I mean, there's definitely a couple of sayings that for me, you know, during those times of like sort of like deep sadness or whatever, that's what I'll call it for myself. I don't want to, again, not minimizing anyone else's experience. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always darkest before the dawn is kind of like a big one. Mm-hmm. And I know people hate Gone with the Wind now, and I understand it. And I know that it's loaded and stuff, but from a filmmaking and writing and acting, you know, perspective, I loved that movie growing up, and Scarlett O'Hara would always say, "Tomorrow's another day." Mm-hmm. And that was like one, you know, you have those movies every once in a while where one line just sticks with you and you're just like, okay. And that, you know, her, Scarlett O'Hara's story in that movie is about perseverance, right? And so it's mm-hmm. like, I'm going to get through this. So stuff like that is like very, I love your viewpoint, and I very much subscribe to it as well, where it's like, there's no place to go but up, which is very interesting when you're talking about a diving suit or diving, right? Like you're stuck at the bottom. Like how much, because I mean, this sounds very much like a, you know, sort of a Robinson Crusoe. Is that the right character? Sort of stuck on an island, like I'm by myself, sort of thing, and trying to figure out, or like Tom Hanks with the volleyball. I can't remember that sort of thing. How much research, you know, the thing that pops in my mind is being isolated, right? And all the stuff mm-hmm. that's come out in the past several years about putting prisoners like in solitary confinement and stuff like that, and how much damage it can do to the psyche, and mm-hmm. how much being isolated from other humans can mess you up. I mean, I'll never forget a Twilight Zone episode when I was a kid, where this guy is a prisoner, and he that I saw as a kid, and he's a prisoner on a planet by himself, and they bring him like a female like companion robot, like just to keep him company, like an android. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing is like, you know, he's been alone this whole time, and she looks human and she acts human. And then by the end, like his sentence is up and they have to destroy the robot. And he's just like, he's beside himself. Like he can't deal mm-hmm. with it. How much research did you have to do as far as like being isolated or treatment, people being stuck in a place, you know, and how much damage it does to them? How much research did you do into that?
Not into that so much specifically. Uh-huh. We did have because you know, you still want to, you want to explore this kind of stuff, but you also want to, you know, make it kind of engaging, especially the stuff underwater with Emil is there's a lot of like narration, there's a lot of flashbacks. And you get to kind of see what's going on in Emil's head at any given time. Sure. But we also want to show how cool the ocean is. And so like sometimes he has to just kind of stuff that down because, oh my God, here comes some sharks, or oh, sure. Wow, look at that fish tornado, or like any number of cool things that go on. We honestly did more research for like what can kill him in the ocean than like the solitude, factor. It also helps that we gave him a companion. There is Douglas, who is a giant, not giant. He's like a great Pacific octopus.
Oh.
And he's kind of like his dog. It's a boy and his dog, more or less. So,
sure.
So he has a companion that he can actually talk to, and who will stay with him and be with him and kind of comfort him. So he does have that. But he's also just in his head a lot. So it helps to kind of keep Emil moving, keep him busy. And I mean, he has reasons for even creating the suit in the first place. There are reasons he wants to go into the water. And we really explore those and show that it might not be the way he wanted, but he still has a mission that he's trying to accomplish by being underwater. So it's a tightrope to walk, trying to keep things moving and also really explore what's going on in Emil's head. But we've also got, you know, B plots and flashbacks to kind of help round that out as well. So yeah, there's quite a bit that's going on in depths, whether that's above or below the surface.
Sure, sure. I mean, that's one of the things I wanted to sort of discuss as well is, you know, our initial description is using like diving or being stuck at the bottom of the ocean, you know, as a metaphor for depression or anxiety or, you know, mental problems. That was one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because something like this could very easily develop into sort of like navel gazing or you know, self-indulgent storytelling, like stuff right. like that. How did you guys put yourself on a path to, I mean, obviously you had each other to bounce stuff off of, right? But right. I mean, there must have been some awareness of that. Like, how do we keep this from being too much about this guy in his head? And I would imagine like the flashbacks and stuff like that, you know, definitely helped with that aspect of the storytelling, right?
Yeah, no, it's kind of why the first draft that I worked on died, because the initial version of Depths was as soon as Emil hits the water, so do we, and we don't come back up until he does. And so we were just with Emil the entire time, and
got
the pacing was super off. Like, it did get very shoegazy, and it wasn't working. So thankfully we added the B plot of his best friend James on the surface, who is like manically trying to find his friend despite having no support system up there either. And that helps break up the underwater bits. And then our flashbacks are there to kind of help grow out relationships and show why they think a certain way. And to just kind of expand on the metaphor of the ocean itself. Mm. So, there's a lot of elements to kind of throw in to make sure that the story keeps moving and it doesn't spend too long in any one place. And it also helps just having cool stuff underwater that is happening that can just like keep the action moving and kind of keep you guessing about, like, because we put Emil through the ringer because any number of things can kill that guy. Like, he can get his suit punctured.
Yeah.
Like, he could step off a ledge and get crushed like a can, like, or everything's trying to eat him. Like, anything can go wrong. And we throw just about anything and everything at him to kind of like snap him out of his own head and be like, oh wait, yeah, I have to survive.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the interesting thing to me. And obviously I don't want you to spoil anything. It's like, how does he eat? How does he go to the bathroom if he's stuck in a suit, like, you know, that he can't necessarily take off if he's in the, I mean, I know it's like self-perpetual, the suit, but does the suit take care of stuff like that? Like, does it feed? You don't have to say if it's a spoiler or anything.
Oh,
like
no,
that,
no. But it's no, he's got a food processor on the hip.
Oh, okay.
So he can grab a fish, stick it in the processor, and it grinds it up into a fish paste. And so there's a tube that goes up into his mouth that allows
nasty.
Him to. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
But it's the best they could do in the 30s, I guess. And then, of course, you know, the pack takes in water around the wearer and then converts it into a breathable oxygen.
Nice.
But it also filters out any sort of waste that needs to when he needs to go. So it there's a lot of hand wavy science in there.
Sure, sure.
Because you know you need the story to happen.
Yeah.
But we tried our best to make it as believable as we can make a perpetual diving suit in the 1930s.
Sure. Sure, sure. I'm just fascinated on the diving suit thing because I mean, like making a comic out of a like an old timey like looking like I just remember I used to have like a Fisher Price like boat set and when mm-hmm. I was a kid and there was like a figure and he had the big giant helmet like
mm-hmm.
where do you think that comes from in like the genesis of your idea that it was like this old time and not something modern, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Was it, do you just like period pieces or are you interested
in
that?
I dig the aesthetic, honestly.
Yeah.
I love like 1930s, like serials, adventure serials.
Sure.
The kind of stuff that inspires like Indiana Jones and stuff.
Oh, really? Do you like watch those things and like,
I have not actually sat down and watched a ton of old like 30s adventure serials. I admit it is quite a bit of an aesthetic obsession more than, you know,
gotcha.
a story obsession. But I mean, Raiders is like my favorite film of all time. So
gotcha.
Like I love that vibe and that kind of that adventurous mystery of that era.
Mm.
That diving helmet is just so – it's such an iconic looking piece of equipment that probably watching I forget the name of it. It was like the ghost diver from an episode of Scooby-Doo. I loved that thing too.
Yeah.
So I just love how it looks and I love that era of history, at least aesthetically. And it felt like the perfect avenue to place these guys in because why not have this sense of discovery with this kind of diving suit? He's very like you could see this book being just an underwater Indiana Jones kind of thing.
Sure.
If you wanted to take it a little more over the top and a little more adventurous. And I like that kind of idea. Even though, you know, we're definitely not going that route, but
mm-hmm.
it's just ripe. I love it.
Sure. And it's funny that you mentioned sort of like an underwater Indiana Jones. I mean, I would imagine if you were going to do that sort of thing, you would have to introduce antagonists and like there's
right.
no like survival. There's no like surviving inhabitants of like Atlantis in this book, right? Like
or
at least if they are, you don't have to tell me that they are.
No, like, it's the most ridiculous thing about this book is the suit itself. So like we're not leaning into that kind of mechaton or Frankenstein kind of vibe.
Sure.
I would love to write that story, but it's not depths.
It sequel. Was,
maybe.
like a modern day sequel.
Let me write Aquaman and we'll do it.
That's great. That's great. One of the things that I'm curious about too, and maybe you can discuss this, is like, how do you deal with a project when you're stuck? Like, right. I mean, you mentioned that a bit and how do you and Wells like work with one another to bounce things off one another? And how did you, because I mean, it was your original idea, right? And I think mm-hmm. we may have talked about this in other interviews, like keeping from being too precious about the thing that you came up with. Right. I mean, you guys must be very good friends and trust each other pretty well to be able to work on something and hand it off to somebody else and let them shape it and kind of make it better. Can you talk about that process a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely helped with something like Depths because like I was convinced that like I had written all I was going to write about Depths and it just wasn't working. I was like, yeah, okay, Depths is dead. I'll move on to the next project.
Sure.
And then Wells was able to be like, no, there's something here that, you're not seen, so let me take a look at it and we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But no, it is it's a very trusting process because if I ever get stuck on something, usually, I mean, the way we work is in a draft system. So like, I'll write the first draft of a script and then I'll pass it off to Wells and he'll write the second draft and then he'll pass it back to me and I'll, and we'll kind of make a conglomeration third draft.
Yeah.
Whenever I get stuck writing, I usually just, you know, step away from it and then I'll come back or I'll power through it knowing that I'm passing it off to Wells. And if this first draft is not working, like I know it's not working, I'll be like, hey, this whole section right here, I was just kind of ad-libbing. I don't exactly know what's happening here. Maybe you can figure it out. Mm-hmm. And then pass it off to him and he'll be like, oh yeah, no, I got a fix for that. And yeah. Pass it back. And so yeah, it helps having a soundboard to kind of pass it back and forth with.
Gotcha. No, that's really great. I mean, one of the other things that I'm also fascinated by, I mean, we did say like, this is like your fourth time back onto this podcast, like in a year, always happy mm-hmm. to have you back. And it's funny because I just interviewed somebody, like I said, the earlier interview in this week is going to be somebody who I've been doing this podcast for like 11 years now, which is crazy.
Congrats.
But I mean, it's another person who, you know, during the pandemic, they didn't, you know, they weren't working on stuff as much or whatever, but they have been on this show like four or five times through the span of like the life of this podcast. And so mm-hmm. for me, it's like, you guys keep putting out Kickstarters and stuff. And I'm just like completely, I mean, impressed by it and fascinated by it as well, because you've got Mechaton, you've got the Frankenstein book. And even before, you know, we became introduced on this podcast, like you were doing Kickstarters for Mechaton before that. So mm-hmm. I'm just like, obviously you have something that works where you're getting these projects funded, but like, how do you guys like keep it going to the extent that you are? Because, you know, some people only do like one Kickstarter a year or like maybe two, you know. It seems like you guys are finishing a project and moving on and finishing a project and moving on. You must have some sort of like discipline or plan. Have you written stuff down? Like, how does it work for you? Give us the secret
sauce is perpetual
Kickstarters.
I have too many binders full of stupid ideas for me to just waste in my head.
Uh-huh.
And so we, you yell those at somebody until, you know, Wells is like, okay, Kickstarter. And, and then Wells is really like all the props in the world for Wells. The Kickstarters work as well as they do because Wells knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. I am not nearly smart enough to handle that kind of crowdfunding stuff.
Like, oh, gotcha.
I just want to make the books, but also like I can't just make the books. And so it helps to have a guy who's better with discipline and numbers and is like, okay, here's what the goal we need to hit for the Kickstarter to even be successful. And then we'll brainstorm add-ons. And so we have kind of gotten it down to a science. It helps, you know, working together just like we do with the scripts and everything. We just have too many ideas that we don't want to just like, I mean, we could just do Mechaton until Mechaton's over, but like, I don't know, get a little bored just doing Mechaton for like 6 years because, you know, the way the crowdfunding model works, takes 6 years to do all 15 issues.
Yeah.
So we just kind of want to spice things up and you know, expand our range and show people that we're not just the over the top action kind of guys. We also have some literary stuff and we're not just all ages. We have some horror stuff and it's honestly, we just don't know how to stay still, honestly.
Sure. I mean, the interesting thing to me is what it seems like you're putting out a decent amount of content, enough to like put up like your own sort of like little shingle, like your own publishing house, mm-hmm. like stuff like that. Is that something that you're both interested in? Like, because I mean, again, I'm sure once Depths is over, you know, you've got something else waiting in the wings. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people try and go find a publisher and something like that. Is that just because you're so successful at what you're doing and how you're doing it, Is that something that you've ever just like, you know, putting a stamp on it, being like, this is our book, this is our concern, you know, like branding it?
I mean, yeah, we do all of our collaborations with Wells and I. It does have the four color stamp.
Yeah,
on
four
it.
Color. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So okay. That is kind of our publishing brand. But no, in terms of being an actual like publishing house, like ain't nobody got the capital for that. So it's Kickstarter for the foreseeable future, the crowdfunding route. You know, the way the indie comics market is structured is a little asinine, but. It's the only one we have at the moment, unless we just want to give our books out for free, which, you know, I'd be fine with. But then, you know, you never make a living at comics.
Sure.
Yeah. And a lot of indie publishers don't want to pay for a book to get created. They want to just pay. They just want to publish an already finished book. And, you know, we also don't have the capital to just like throw money in a hole and then have the book get drawn and then hope we make it back when we publish it.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a project by project kind of thing. We do have plans and we have things written out and ready to go for like, like I said, Mechaton is a 15 issue series. Frankenstein's a 13 issue series. We have another Depths is a 2-book project. And then there's so many other projects that haven't even seen the light of day yet that will eventually come to Kickstarter. But as of right now, it's a project by project kind of thing. It's the way indie publishing is working right now.
Sure, sure. No, it's interesting because you mentioned the four color comics and that's kind of mm-hmm. how I know you. But I'm just quickly scrolling through the Kickstarter page right now. And I don't see like four color comics logo. I don't right. see, you know, it's under Wells Thompson. So mm-hmm. I guess that's what I'm sort of like wondering about is there's nothing, you know, and there's a couple of add-ons from Mechaton and, you know, other projects that you've done. And maybe it's just a mock-up, but I'm not seeing like four color comics like on the cover. You know what I'm saying? And I guess that's yeah. the sort of thing where I'm like, you know, it's you're, you know, I mean, even... what was the thing in the 90s that like John Byrne and Frank Miller and, you know, they were publishing through Dark Horse Legend. They called themselves Legend.
Oh, yes.
That's what it was.
Yes.
You remember that? Yeah. Yeah. The Legend didn't last very long. But I guess, yeah, I mean, that's the sort of thing I'm saying. Like, obviously I know who you are. People know who Wells are because you've got people backing your projects, but it seems like there's no brand identity, and that's what I was wondering about, like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like on the cover.
We started off with, you know, everything was through the four color brand. Gotcha. and that stamp does still appear on every published book we do. It's just on the back cover.
Gotcha. Okay,
so yeah, it'll be in the bottom back corner, but it's
put it on the front.
Oh no, and ruin that beautiful art? No way.
Oh, come on.
It was the focal point of our partnership, our career, for probably the first 3 years. We were doing all the in-house ash cans that I was drawing, and all of our social media it was through the four color accounts. Mm. But at some point it was, we had reached a point where the brand wasn't doing anything for us.
Gotcha.
Like, people were more interested in Wells and Dalton more than they were Four Color itself. Cause Four gotcha. Color is just this koala in a leather jacket and sunglasses. And, nobody knows what that is. But if you say, oh, this is Wells, he's a comic writer, or this is Dalton, he's a cartoonist, like, people are like, okay, I know what that is. I know what those projects are. And so they're able to follow us individually more than we ever could as the Four Color brand. So we've more or less retired Four Color as a brand itself, but it's still that, that glue that kind of is the defines our partnership. So we still keep it alive. It's just, it doesn't have its own website or Twitter page anymore.
Sure. Sure. Are you saying, well, it sounds like you didn't find any real big value in right. having that sort of thing, like really.
Yeah. In this new era, like that may have been able to fly in like the late 80s, early 90s. Uh-huh. But in the modern era of individual brands where, you know, Dalton Shannon is the brand, like it doesn't make any sense to have a, you know, a hypothetical publishing house called Four Color Comics be your face unless you actually are a publisher, which we, you know, we're just making in-house comics at that point. Like if we reached out through the Four Color Twitter account to try and like you know, collaborate with some artists, the first thing they're going to be is like, who is Four Color Comics? What have they done? Like, let's look at their catalog, and they're not going to find a whole lot. But if like it's Wells reaching out, they can be like, oh, this is a human being. I can work with human beings. Like, so it makes more sense in the modern, it makes more sense in the modern economy, I think, of individual brands to, leave the logos behind and focus on the people.
Sure. But it sounds like you and Wells have developed like a pretty tight partnership, and you have a plan to like keep going forward together, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, the train's not stopping anytime soon. We have too many ideas and too many projects. I mean, we're both working on stuff individually, of course.
Yeah.
Like he's got his own projects and I've got mine. But all the big stuff we're doing so far has been together. And that's not going to be stopping anytime soon. We're kind of hitched to this wagon for at least the next 10 years. Who knows?
Oh, wow. That's quite a commitment.
It's Kickstarter's fault. You know how long it takes to make a 15-issue series on Kickstarter? Yeah. Like 6 years.
It's a long time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. That's interesting. I mean, it's just it's always fascinating to me how this Kickstarter sort of like economy has like exploded in a way and made like comics publishing available to everyone. Like how, because you're both writers, right? You're bouncing back and forth. For you, is the process of like getting an artist, getting a colorist, getting a letterer, getting all, you know, designer, whatever it is that you need to make your comics, how difficult is that on your end? You know, especially with the way that you guys seem to be functioning, which is like Kickstarter's done, fulfill Kickstarter, you know, once it's funded and stuff, and then move on to the next thing. Like, it sounds like you're consistently planning ahead, but there must be sort of like stress as to like, you know, because I mean, obviously all artists are different, all you know, designers are different, work at different speeds, paces, you know, maybe more or less reliable than other artists. How does that function for both of you on that end? Because I mean, despite you saying that you're not a publishing house, I mean, you are publishing your own books and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole other, you know, mechanical aspect to bringing these books to life that, you know, maybe somebody who's a writer would not be well-versed in, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's being a writer in comics is kind of a misnomer because you're not writing a whole lot. You're more of a,
here it comes.
You're more of a, you're more of a manager. Like that's what, pure comics to me is one guy doing everything on the page.
Sure.
And so when you're just a writer, for me, like you're the least important part of the team, right? Like,
WGA strike going on. You can't say that.
What I'm saying is like, it is the artist who is the guy driving the book. Like the book does not exist without the artist. The artist knows how to lay out that page in the most interesting way. Like it's the artist's book, and it's our job to kind of give and they don't even need us. Or, you know, a talented cartoonist can just go and do their own book. But, you know, it's kind of the writer's job to kind of give that structure and, put the words in the mouth, but not necessarily on the page, 'cause that's also the letterer's, purview. Mm. For us, we actually don't end up doing a ton of writing, especially for these projects that we've brought to Kickstarter and have had planned out for a long time. It's a lot of like managerial duties. It's a lot of marketing. It's a lot of emails.
Sounds like a publisher to me.
All we're missing is like the building, right?
Sure.
So it's thankfully we have our letterer Nathan Kempf is incredibly talented and incredibly versatile. Mm. So we're able to actually bring him with us project to project, and he's able to bring a different vibe with his letters for everything we've done. And it's brilliant. And we're so thankful that we don't have to always hunt for new letterers. Same with our designer, Brenda Snellby. She is a godsend. She's able to help us design the logos and the cover treatments and the Kickstarter page itself. She is so great. Mm-hmm. So then on that leaves like every project, we just have to look for the right line artist and colorist.
Yeah.
And thankfully this time around, Jay has a great working relationship with our colorist, Rajesh. They've been on quite a few projects together, so they have a good working relationship, and Rajesh was perfect for Depths as well. Sure. So that helps. But like, it's a lot of, you know, looking through Twitter and Instagram and seeing what styles kind of speak to us. And then we reach out to them and see how we can collaborate. And it's, you know, it's a lot of corralling. It's figuring out timetables. It's a lot. But, you know, if I could draw, I wouldn't have to do any of this, you know?
Yeah. 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 But didn't you? I mean, I think we chatted a long time ago, maybe in our first interview, where you made your own little comics and you drew them yourself. Mm-hmm. Am I remembering that correctly or incorrectly?
Yeah, no. I mean, I've been making comics since I was like 8. So there's always those little things. But when Wells and I first started the 4-color shenanigans, we were like, well, we can't afford artists, one, and two, we don't have the cachet to even ask somebody to draw anything.
Yeah.
Like who are we? We're nobody. So we decided to just write little 8-page scripts as like exercises. And then I would go and draw them. And then we would just like print them off, hand staple them and sell them at conventions.
I want to see that stuff. Where is that stuff? Where can I find that?
You know, it used to be on my website. We had all of them available. I don't know if they're still there. I probably need to repost them again. but yeah, no, they're very crude. They're very quick. Like it's wild. But I am in the process. Those individual projects I spoke of, I'm in the process of like learning how to draw and inking and coloring and lettering. I'm learning the whole process and looking to kind of do an all-in-one project here in a little bit. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of frustration because like I've gotten to a point where like I know I'm a good writer, it comes really easily to me, and then I have to do this other part of the creative process that is not coming so easily to me, and I'm like, dang it, why can't my hand just do what I want it to do? It does it the other time. Why can't it do it here?
So that's interesting because, I mean, I tend to be a little bit envious of writers that come onto this podcast. And I tend to mostly interview writers because artists, for some reason, I don't know, that maybe they're shy or something, or they just don't know that they can contribute to an interview. Like, I don't know. They don't come on. I don't busy. Get them onto the podcast.
They got to do all the work.
Which that's true. They're busy, but I mean, that's the interesting thing is like, you know, I've been working on my own book and I'm drawing it, I'm writing it, I'm coloring, I'm doing everything myself. I've only put out like one issue in like however many years, you know, on my mm-hmm. own. And there's an envy there where when I'm speaking to writers and it's like, oh yeah, I was able to get this artist and stuff like that. And it's just like, you know, for me, it's like, well, maybe I could get an artist, but like my own ego is like grumble, grumble, you know, I want to do this mm-hmm. myself, you know, it's not, you know, that sort of thing. But the thing that I'm always curious about with talking to writers, because the hard part for me, I don't think like, and I'm not trying to be egotistical and saying like I'm a good writer because I'm not like a great writer or anything like that. But for me, the discipline is, and this is the discussion sometimes I have with my friends, like if I'm in front of the TV or I'm bored or I'm doing something, my instinct goes towards doodling and drawing. Like I'm mm-hmm. sitting down and I'm drawing my ideas. But my understanding is my friends who are really like into writing, or people that I know that love to write, their instinct is to, or their discipline is to like go and sit down and like actually write. And my whole thing, a lot of times I find that difficult. Like I have like all these ideas swirling around in my head and it's just like, okay, but I won't sit down. You know, there's like this weird thing not that doesn't, you know what I'm saying? Like with writers, it seems to work that way that you guys can sit down and write, but you're talking about having difficulty like sitting down and illustrating. For me, it's easy to just like put out a little cartoon character or something and be cool with that. So I find it so fascinating that it's like we're coming from, but I feel like writers can get more done because it's like you guys, I mean, as long as there's capital and stuff like that, you know, like you can get the ideas out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm kind of a little flip flopped. Like when I'm just kind of bored and not really having anything to do, I'll doodle. I doodle all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when I need to actually sit down and work, the writing just kind of the writing itself kind of flows out. It's fine.
Sure.
It's not, you know, you get stuck, but it's not like pulling teeth like a lot of writers seem to think it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I actually have to sit down and like make sure this drawing looks good, that's when it's like pulling teeth. And I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm frustrated. I'm bored. I hate this. I'm never going to draw.
Yeah.
But doodling is just free form. I could just do that all day. But I have lost sight of the question.
Well, no, I mean, I think it's mostly just a discussion on, to me, it's very interesting of like, I guess the question is like, for at least for me and anybody who's interested in writing and stuff like that, how did you, I guess, develop your discipline to like sit down? Is it natural? Is it instinct? Or is it something that, I mean, I would imagine, like you just said, some people find it hard to do. But for you, when you sit down and write, like, are you following the whole Stephen King thing of like writing, I don't know how many pages he says, like a day or whatever? Like, is that your process?
No, I'm pretty manic. So, with Frankenstein, when we had decided on a direction for Frankenstein, I had point on it. So I was going to write, you know, I write all the first drafts for Frankenstein.
Sure.
And, I went away and over like maybe a 2-week period, I churned out 13 Frankenstein scripts.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, bada bum, 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 bum. Here we go. First draft, we're done. And then, you know, I didn't write anything for like another 6 months or something.
Oh, wow.
Like it's very, I'm also discovering as an adult that I probably have ADHD as well. So my brain is very like, it needs novelty to keep things fresh and interesting. So I need to be more disciplined, but like sitting down every day and writing X amount of pages or drawing X amount of panels, like I don't quite have that discipline like I need to yet.
Yeah, I'm the same
but
way.
But it's, I usually just create when it's fun for me rather than because I need to get it done.
Yeah.
And when you start doing things professionally, that's a mindset I need to, you know, you need to break. You need to be like, no, the work needs to get done. Here it is. Thankfully, you know, for me, writing is the easiest part of the job. So we get that done first and then I don't have to worry about it again.
That's great. Well, good for you. I'm glad that's the easiest part of the job. For me, it's just I hate typing. I'm just a terrible typist. Mm-hmm. I never became great at it. So for me, and then, you know, a lot of people are, you should just write it by hand. And I'm like, yeah, I can do that. I don't know why. For me, it's just like, sometimes it's hard to just like sit down and just write the damn thing out. But then I was also thinking about like, I learned that, like those old Looney Tunes cartoons. Like I asked a friend of mine, like, why don't they have writers like on those? Or like, how come we've never had a documentary on the writers? We always have documentaries on, you know, the people that animated it, like Chuck Jones or, you know, like the animation legends, but there's never any like documentaries on the writers. And my understanding is like that the development process for a lot of that stuff was on the board. You know what I mean? They were just doodling out. And I was like, that's so fascinating to me. You know what I mean? Like that's, you know, because these days it's like, you got to have a script and it's got to be this and it's Marvel style or DC style or however style you want. You know what I mean? And then you hand it to the artist and the artist goes blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of like freeing to think about it in that way, especially if what you like to do is draw, but then it's also intimidating. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I mean, all the different cogs in the machine that is comics and animation, all of those different cogs are there to limit failure.
Sure.
So like and that's why those Looney Tunes from like the 40s and 50s are so special, because it's almost stream of consciousness. It's very much mind to hand to paper to film, because they were just kind of churning these things out. And it's kind of some of the magic of like the 60s Marvel books as well. Like it's not like they have a plan and they're trying to get the greatest piece of literature ever written. They're trying to get a book out the door every week. And so it's very just the energy is there. And the longer you sit with it, the more cogs you bring to the machine, the less energetic it can start to feel. So it's nice to have different kind of avenues where it can be spontaneous and you can make your own stuff, and you don't necessarily have to, follow the beat of the current project. You can just go and have your own little fun and come back when you need to.
Very cool, very cool. Well, I guess one of the things that I find interesting about depths is, and that I'm wondering about is, like how many different ways you come up to kill this guy. Because my imagination, I mean, like I said, I was scrolling through the Kickstarter thing and I'm like, well, there's sharks and there's drowning and there's starvation. And I'm just like very interested now to be like, hey, what else happens to this guy? Like when he's on the bottom
Well,
of the ocean? A lot.
there's seven chapters and we find at least one way to mess with him every issue, so
That's great. Wow. That's amazing. Well, again, thank you for coming back on to the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. I always appreciate you
Of
coming back
course.
on,
Oh, I love
Dalton.
coming on. It's one of my favorites.
Oh, great. I'm glad that you say that because I very much appreciate you coming on and I always enjoy chatting with you. Hopefully someday we'll get to meet in person. I don't know, but it's
All the way out in California?
I know. But it's nice and warm here, although this summer it's probably going to be crazy with all it's
Oh.
apparently it rained all winter. And then now it's going to be blazing hot. So, well, what are you going
Yeah,
to
you coastal boys have fun with that. These Midwest boys are just gonna sit in our
That's
beautiful summers.
great. Where are you located again? Where, like, what's your
I'm in
general?
Green Bay,
Okay,
Wisconsin.
gotcha. Nice. Awesome. Well, Dalton K. Shannon, thank you so much for chatting with me. I always appreciate you coming on. Thank you for taking the time. Again, the book is called Depths. It is currently on Kickstarter. Go throw some, I don't know, coin that you found at the bottom of the ocean in a treasure chest
Give me the doubloons.
at depth. Where can people find you online, Dalton? Just so you know, they can find all of your projects.
You can find me on basically all the social media at Dalton K. Shannon. I don't post that much, so have fun.
Sure.
But also, like on my Twitter is a link to our newsletter sign up, where you can once a month we send out a newsletter, keep you posted on all the projects we're working on, books we're reading, cocktails, recipes, cat pics, like all sorts of stuff.
Still on Twitter, huh, Dalton? Still on Twitter.
Not actively, no, but the profile's there. And then, of course, my website, daltonkshannon.com.
Gotcha.
You can also find the newsletter sign up there, and I need to update that more. But
Nice.
and then also the Depths Kickstarter running until May 31st. So go grab you something if you like it.
Go throw some rare bouillon at the Depths Kickstarter. Thank you so much. Thanks for your time. I really
Yeah,
appreciate
thanks for
it.
having me.
Absolutely. Anytime. Again, this has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. You can check us out on parttimefanboy.com. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. We are still on Facebook and Instagram. We have abandoned the hellscape that is Twitter. You know why, people. You know why. And please go to Kickstarter and support the Depths project by Dalton K. Shannon and the mysterious Wells Thompson. Someday, Wells, someday we will get you on the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-time fanboy. Part-time. Part-time fanboy. Boy, Boy.